Hare Krishna. Welcome to the Bhakti Shastri course, where we start with the Ishopanishad. Now that we have completed that Ishopanishad, we'll start with the Nectar of Instruction, or the Upadesha Amrit by Shri Rupa Goswami. So let's recap what we discussed at the start of the Ishopanishad about the importance of the four books. Essentially, in spiritual life, we need to know sadhya and sadhana. Sadhya is the goal, that which is to be achieved. That is ultimately Krishna. Veda ischa sarvair aham eva vedyo. And sadhana is the means, the process by which we are supposed to achieve that. So if I want to go, I need to know where do I want to go. Okay, I want to go to Delhi, I want to go to Mayapur. So if I have to go to Mayapur, then the next first destination is fixed, then the process. Okay, am I going by train or plane or ship, whatever. So that's the sadhya and sadhana. Now the sadhya and sadhana, they are established through Bhagavad Gita and Ishopanishad. That means how among the various sadhyas bhakti is the highest, how among the various sadhanas Bhagavan Krishna is the highest, that is established through Bhagavad Gita and Ishopanishad. And how they are to be practiced, for further knowledge, how we bhakti is to be practiced and who Krishna actually is as a person is talked about in the Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction. Now, of course, this division, like any other division, is not waterproof. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, we do get directions about how to practice bhakti. When Krishna says, Machitta, Madgata, Prana, in 10.11, or in 10.9 when he says that, or when he says Satatam Kita Yanto Mam, 9.14. So there is descriptions of bhakti also. But the systematic delineation of bhakti, the details of how it is to practice, the way it is given in Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction, it is not given in Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita analyzes various processes and then establishes the supremacy of bhakti. Nectar of Instruction, we will see, it doesn't even mention much about Ashtanga Yoga, Dhyana Yoga or Karma Yoga, because that is not its focus. It assumes that the seeker has accepted the point that bhakti is the best way. And now, how is bhakti to be practiced? Now, Nectar of Devotion will compare bhakti a little bit with other processes. It will glorify the supremacy of bhakti in the beginning, and then immediately it will start off by explaining the details of bhakti and then describing the 64 qualities of Bhagavan also. So, sadhya and sadhana, how they are established through Bhagavad Gita and Ishopanishad. Now they are established preliminarily through Ishopanishad. Ishopanishad, we saw that it moved from a universalist understanding of Ishvara as the controller of the universe to a personalist understanding as a person who has a face and who bestows mercy and removes obstacles and who can be called to at the moment of death. Now, the mode of approach in the Ishopanishad, the last four verses, five verses especially, last four mantras, 15 to 18, they were focusing on prayers. That is essentially bhakti. So, the Ishopanishad points towards Bhagavan and bhakti, a personal understanding and a prayerful attitude towards the Absolute Truth. This will be elaborated further in the Bhagavad Gita. And we will go to that gradually. Now we are focusing on the Nectar of Instruction because it elaborates the process of bhakti and it enables us to apply those principles in our day-to-day life. So our process will be, first we will establish, then we will look at the application. So philosophical understanding through Ishopanishad, then practical application through Nectar of Instruction. Then again philosophical understanding through Bhagavad Gita and then practical application through Nectar of Devotion. That is the way we are going to take these four books. And in the first two books, that means the Bhagavad Gita, so that means the Ishopanishad and the Nectar of Instruction, we will be focusing on the purports of Srila Prabhupada, analyzing them, categorizing them. And then based on that, we will be understanding Srila Prabhupada's mood and mission and how he wanted us to practice Krishna consciousness. When we come to Bhagavad Gita, because the book is so big, we will not be able to go too detailed into the purports, analyzing the purports. We will be focusing more on the flow of the Gita and the way that flow is understood through Srila Prabhupada's purports as well as the previous Acharya's purports. When we look at the Ishopanishad, we will discuss a few. So when you look at the Nectar of Instruction, we'll also look at a few points which Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes in his book Bhaktialoka occasionally. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur also wrote a commentary on the issue, on the Nectar of Instruction, called Anuvatti Commentary, which Srila Prabhupada quotes quite frequently in his own purports. We'll look at that also. But our primary focus will be on the Bhaktivedanta purports. We discussed this approach at the start of the Ishopanishad also. We want to go systematically. So first we build our philosophical fundamentals by understanding the mood that Srila Prabhupada wanted and the message that Srila Prabhupada delivered. So once we understand that, then we can look at what the previous acharya is also saying to supplement our understanding. In the Nectar of Instruction, the essence is actually the practice of bhakti. So let's look at the themes in the Nectar of Instruction. There are various themes which are all related with practical life. It talks about mind and sense control in the practical, very important in the first three verses. Then it talks about attitude, how we should have attitude in spiritual life and towards devotees and towards the process. Then Srila Prabhupada also explains how ISKCON is fulfilling the purpose of providing sadhu sangha. And ISKCON is also providing, and ISKCON is basically a facility to apply Nectar of Instructions, many instructions. Then it talks also about the dynamic relationship between guru and disciple. And a very important aspect of the Nectar of Instruction is the principle of sadhu sangha, the association of devotees. How we should associate and how we should not associate with devotees. And when we talk about devotees, not all devotees are at the same level. So devotees are in a hierarchy, some are higher, some are lower. So what are the different kinds of devotees, and how do we know the kind of devotee that a particular person is? What is their behavior? What are their qualifications? And then based on that, we also talk further about bhakti. So we understand that devotees are at various levels, and what are the levels of devotion? That will be more systematically elaborated in Nectar of Devotion, but here also it is given. In bhakti, there are various stages of bhakti, and there is a gradual development of bhakti. So how all this happens will be the theme of Nectar of Instruction. So here is an overview of Nectar of Instruction from the point of view of the nine stages of bhakti as explained by Sri Rupa Goswami in his other book, The Nectar of Devotion. So it is described that bhakti progresses in nine stages. Shraddha is the first stage. When we come in the association of devotees, so when we, with a preliminary inquisitive attitude, decide to investigate, okay, what is going on? What are these Hare Krishna? What is this Krishna business? What is there something beyond this life? What is the meaning and purpose of life? So Srila Prabhupada explains that this is basically a positive curiosity. This is Shraddha. And Shraddha has to be expressed through action. When a person has Shraddha at that time, a person does some things through that. So if I have faith, okay, I have a disease, I have to go to a doctor. And when I go to the doctor, I talk with the doctor. So that is talked about in the first stages. So we go and inquire. So first three mantras basically talk about the preliminaries which help us to develop Shraddha and which nourish Shraddha. Then after that, there is sadhu sangha. Sadhu sangha means the association of adau shraddha, sadhu sangha. When we come in the association of devotees, in that association, we learn to practice the process of devotional service. So this sadhu sangha is an elaborate aspect of this process, of this book. Now, we just as when we go to a doctor and the doctor explains what is the disease, then we start taking the treatment. So similarly, when there is sadhu sangha, after sadhu sangha comes bhajana kriya, the practice of devotional service, which is like a spiritual treatment. When we take a spiritual treatment, the next thing that happens is we start getting cured. So especially the prominent symptoms of sickness that are there, they start subsiding. So that is the stage of anartha nivritti. Anartha nivritti essentially means that nivritti means retirement. Anartha is the undesirables. Anartha. Artha means meaning. Anartha means that has no meaning. Artha also means value or money. And anartha means that which has no value, no money. So our sensual desires based on lust, anger, greed, envy, pride and illusion, they have no meaning and they have no value. But somehow we assume that they have a lot of meaning and a lot of value. So anartha nivritti means that these, this misconception of ascribing a meaning and value to that which is meaningless and valueless, that stops. This misconception retires from our consciousness. And when the misconception retires, when we see how we are feeling and becoming better by this, actually our faith increases. Just as when we take a treatment and the treatment cures us, and when we become cured by the treatment, we feel that, oh, this is good. This treatment works. I want to take this treatment and become fully healthy. So from after anartha nivritti comes the stage of nishtha. Nishtha means the faith has become very strong at that time. The faith has in fact become like a banyan tree. At the stage of Shraddha, the faith is like a banana tree. A banana tree can be shaken. If an elephant comes, it can just shake it and uproot it also. But even if an elephant comes to a banyan tree, the elephant, it may put its trunk around it, it may dash its head against it, it may try to pull with all its strength, but a banyan tree is so deep-rooted that it cannot be shaken. So like that, we come to the stage of Nishtha when we do bhajana kriya and experience anartha nivritti. So this stage is also talked about in the 7th verse, hinted at. Then there is ruchihi. Ruchi means that time, as we become spiritually healthy, we start developing a taste for Krishna consciousness. Right now we have a taste for worldly things, for sensual things. But we develop a taste for spiritual things, for Krishna and service to Krishna, and the paraphernalia connected with Krishna at that stage. We may feel glimpses of the taste now also, but that is it is far deeper and richer taste that we get as ruchi. And from ruchi comes asakti. So in asakti, one goes much deeper and one is getting a taste, but this is a taste when it's developed, one gets attached. So in negative sense, when a person is given a free taste of drugs initially, person takes drugs, first the person likes the drugs, and then after that the person gets hooked to it, becomes attached to it, can't live to it without it. That's in a negative sense. But similarly in the positive sense, when we get an experience of the joy of the taste of devotion, then we become attached not just to devotion but also to Krishna, the person around whom our devotion is centered. And then after that comes bhava. Bhava is spiritual emotion, and it is just the preliminary to prema. Prema is just the next door, next stage. So prema is the full development of love for Krishna, which is systematic, which is comprehensive, which is all consuming of our being. So it just fully floods our heart with ocean of emotion, and then we feel that there is no need for us to be attracted to anything worldly. And it is at this stage of prema that the devotees of Vrindavan live, the devotees in the spiritual world live, and at this stage of prema, that is our ultimate aspiration. And how do we come to the stage of prema? By the steady practice of devotional service. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that Bhaktilata Beej is like a creeper. It's given by the spiritual master and then it has to be protected. Protected in two ways. One is that a fence has to be built so that no predators come and damage or destroy it. And secondly, it has to be watered so that it will grow. So it has to be protected and nourished. And how it can be protected and nourished so that it will eventually grow and blossom and give the fruit of love of God, fruit of prema. That is what Nectar of Instruction talks about. So in this way, Next of Instruction, a very important book which will guide us on the path of devotion. Now let us look at the introduction of the preface of Nectar of Instruction which Srila Prabhupada has given us. So in this preface, Srila Prabhupada starts very strikingly. He explains that the Krishna consciousness movement is conducted under the supervision of Srila Rupa Goswami. So this is very deeply indicative of Srila Prabhupada's profound sense of humility and connectedness with the acharyas and with the parampara. Srila Prabhupada is not saying that this movement is conducted under my supervision. He has started it, and for all practical purposes, without him, there would have been no Krishna consciousness movement in the West. And Srila Prabhupada is constantly involved in preaching, guiding, overseeing, and doing practically everything that was necessary for the expansion of Krishna consciousness movement. In the initial days, he was a one-man army. And then later on, he was the commander of a fallible army. Many of his soldiers would fall, but he would go and raise them and inspire them again to fight and keep winning. And they won glorious victories. The way the Krishna consciousness movement spread just within 11 years all over the world has few parallels in world history. Few at all, for that matter, if any parallels. It's extraordinary. But Srila Prabhupada is so humble here. He is saying that it's under the supervision of Srila Rupa Goswami. Now, initially when Srila Prabhupada published this book, the devotees saw that, okay, this is meant for devotees. And he published a very limited run. When Srila Prabhupada came to know, he said, no, distribute it widely. Although it is meant for devotees, we want eventually the whole world to become devotees. And even new people can learn about this book and they can benefit from it. But Srila Prabhupada's vision was not just limited that only a small number of people are devotees. He saw the whole world as filled with potential devotees. Now, Srila Prabhupada then explains who is Rupa Goswami. So, we have to understand that there is a progression in the Vedic revelation. So the Vedic scriptures give us the Bhagavatam, where the highest truth about Krishna's supremacy is given. However, that truth was not widely propagated in the intermediate period after the start of Kali Yuga. Other processes gained more prominence. Karmakanda was there, and as a refutation of Karmakanda, Buddhism came up, Jainism came up, and then as a refutation of that impersonalism, as propagated by Shankaracharya came up, then Vishishta Dvaita by Ramacharya, and then Dvaita by Madhacharya came up. So like that, bhakti was re-established. But when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, he established the conclusion of the Vedic literature of pure devotional service to Lord Sri Krishna. And once this conclusion was established, then that became central to our understanding, to the subsequent understanding of the Vedic literature in the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself who has come again, and he has come to reveal the essence of his descent as Krishna 5000 years ago. When Krishna came, he revealed the Bhagavad Gita and he revealed his wonderful pastimes. But the way to access those pastimes is through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, the Lord can do everything himself, but he always asks his associates to play part, and he makes various of his associates play roles in this world. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got the six Goswamis, who were prominent, respectable, intelligent and charismatic individuals in different parts of the country. And he got, in a sense, recruited all of them when he was traveling to various parts of the country. And he got all of them to go to Vrindavan. And there he gave them four missions. First was to build temples, to glorify the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Second is to rediscover the lost places of the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Third is to write literature establishing the supremacy of devotional service as the ultimate teaching of the Vedic literature. And fourth is to exemplify and teach the practice of pure devotional service. And the Goswamis did all these four missions. So the first two are in terms of, say, finding places and building places, and second two is in terms of books. So Srila Prabhupada often said that these are the prominent signs of success within a movement. Within the movement, he said, somebody builds a temple, somebody writes a book. So he says, it's like a part of the material world has been offered back to Krishna. When a place is made into a temple, then the material world is spiritualized over there. So that is a significant definition of, significant sign of success. And similarly, Srila Prabhupada said, every time a book is published, I feel as if an empire is won. Why? Because a book is an empire of thought. They said there can be an empire which spans in space. Similarly, a book can be an empire of thought. And when that book is read by people, then that book's wisdom attracts and conquers the people's hearts. And in this way, the empire expands within. And of course, both the building of the temples and the building of writing of books, both are meant ultimately to attract people. So the third success, science Srila Prabhupada said, is how many people are becoming devotees. So how many books are distributed, and how many temples are built, and how many people are becoming devotees. These are the ways in which we can tangibly measure the success of the spread of Krishna consciousness. So, in Vrindavan, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the Goswami these two missions. One is write books about Vaishnava Siddhanta and Vaishnava Sadachar. Vaishnava Siddhanta is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the conclusion of all the Vedic teachings. And pure devotional service to Krishna is the ultimate message of the Vedic teachings. And then, how to practice pure devotional service, teach that through books. So these are two kinds of books that he told them to write. And of course, when you are teaching pure devotional service, he told them to exemplify pure devotional service also. And then he also told them to build temples and also rediscover the lost places of the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. The Goswamis were very important, critical representatives of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire for spreading Krishna consciousness. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his later part of his life, last 18 years, he stayed in Puri. And he basically relished pure love of Krishna over there, in the association of his intimate devotees. Basically there he demonstrated the spiritual world and the love for Krishna that floods the devotees' hearts in the spiritual world. But at the same time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had a mission, and that was to share Krishna consciousness with everyone else. So who was going to do that? That was done primarily by the Goswamis. The Goswamis not only preached to the various scholars who were in the Vrindavan area, but along with that, they laid the foundations for future generations of preaching. They especially wrote books, and through the writing of the books, they systematized the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All the books written by the other associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are mostly pastime books. We have the Bengali associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wrote pastime books, and those books are important, no doubt. But they don't establish the Siddhanta that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave so thoroughly. Chaitanya Bhagavat, Chaitanya Mangal, Chaitanya Chandrodaya Natak, Chaitanya Charit. These are books written by Vrindavandas Thakur, Lochindas Thakur, Kavi Karanapur, Murari Gupta. And all these are very important books. But they focus primarily on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. So what are Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings? They don't come so systematically in those books. Therefore, that was the role of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. They wrote the philosophical teachings and they established the teachings in a very systematic way. And then the two literary heritages, the Bengali literary heritage of pastimes and the Vrindavan literary heritage of philosophy, that was integrated into one book, the magnum opus of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, that was Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, Chaitanya Charitamrita was written by a person, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who was born in Bengal, and he was steeped since childhood in the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But then Nityananda Prabhu instructed him to go to Vrindavan, and there under Vrindavan he got systematically trained by the Goswamis. And after comprehensive lifelong training under them, then he wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, the literary heritages of Gaudiya Vaishnavism are integrated into this one book, which is extremely important, Chaitanya Charitamrita. So the pastime heritage and the philosophy heritage, both are integrated together in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now, going backwards to the philosophical heritage and the practical heritage that is there. And generally, the Goswamis in their books don't focus so much on pastimes. Even when they talk about pastimes, for example, Rupa Goswami has written, Sanatan Goswami has written a book called Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So in that book, he describes the pastimes of Lord Krishna and his various incarnations, not in a comprehensive chronological sense of all the pastimes. He describes those pastimes to illustrate the Siddhanta. The Siddhanta that Goloka Vrindavan is the highest among all the abodes of the Lord, and the gopis are the highest among all the devotees of the Lord. So the Vaishnavas had a particular focus. The Vaishnavas of Vrindavan, the Goswamis had a particular focus. So just by hearing the pastimes of either Radha Krishna or even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we cannot understand their full glory. That's why here Srila Prabhupada quotes Ratandas Thakur. Now, Ratandas Thakur was a prominent disciple of the Goswamis. So, Ratandas Thakur was a Shiksha disciple of Jiv Goswami. Rupa Raghunath Pade Hai Vyakuti Kabe Hama Bujabe Se Yugala Priti. So, only when I develop a taste for understanding the life and the teachings of the Goswami, Pade, Rupa Raghunath Pade Have Akuti. Akuti means great attraction. So when I develop a great attraction to the lotus feet of Rupa and Raghunath, to their feet, now the feet of Vaishnavas manifest through their instructions. So we can go and touch the feet of the Vaishnavas, that is very good. If they allow us and if we get the opportunity. But we can't just force ourselves on that. The way the lotus feet manifest in a much more accessible and transformational way is by the instructions that they give. So their instructions come not just through the books that they write, but also the life that they live. So here he's telling that when we read the books of the Goswamis, then we understand what actually is devotion to Radha Krishna. Because they are exemplary devotees and they are absorbed in the mood of selfless devotion to Radha Krishna. So, the whole Krishna consciousness movement, which comes down through the parampara, starting from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu down. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not the starter of the Vaishnava Sampradaya, but Gaudiya Vaishnavism is primarily started by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, in the Madhva Sampradaya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed a flavor that was not there before. So, we are the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. So in that sense, we come from Brahma. The knowledge comes from Brahmaji through Madhvacharya. And then ultimately it comes down through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, through Srila Prabhupada and our spiritual master to us. At the same time, it is also important to understand that this whole process of devotion is enriched at a particular historical moment by the incarnation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when we talk about the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, it is not a different Sampradaya from the Brahma Madhva Sampradaya, but it's also different in the sense that revelation is richer. So it's a Chintya Bheda Bheda. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Prabhupada writes, he appeared in order to bestow upon human society the benediction of the science of Krishna. It's interesting, the benediction of the science of Krishna. Now how do we know the science of Krishna? That is by looking at the devotees who are the most vivid exemplars of that science. Those who exemplify that science the most, and that is the gopis. So the most exalted of the Krishna's activities are the associated gopi activities of the gopis. Now at a deeper level, the Goswamis are actually the associates of Radharani. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself in the mood of Radharani, and the various associates of Radharani have manifested as the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So for example, Lalita Vishakha Sakhya manifested as Swarup Damodar Goswami and Ramananda Rai. So like that, along with the gopis, there are associates called as the Manjaris. And these Manjaris are assistants in the pastimes of Radha Krishna. They are younger and they assist in the pastimes. So Rupa Goswami is a Rupa Manjari in the spiritual world. That means Rupa Goswami knows the intimate pastimes of Radha Krishna, not just by some intellectual analysis or just by scripture study, but by personal experience. And he is manifesting in this age, in this incarnation, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, not in the form of a Manjari, but in the mood and the form of a sannyasi. So he exemplifies renunciation. At the same time, while exemplifying renunciation, he also exemplifies extraordinary devotion. He exemplifies how renounced devotion can be practiced. So now the example of renounced devotion is important because it is very easy to misunderstand the pastimes of Radha and Krishna and do at a material level what they are doing at a spiritual level. Imitate them and they cause self-destruction by that. Therefore, the pastimes of Radha and Krishna can be understood only through the teachings of the Goswamis and great saints like them. Otherwise, we will get a thorough misunderstanding. Now, Srila Prabhupada comes to what is the teaching? After explaining that we have to understand through them, So the first point in the purport which Srila Prabhupada makes is that we have to have self-mastery. So the necessity of self-mastery on the spiritual path. It is explained in the scriptures that the body and the soul are quite opposite to each other. The body is asat achit nirananda, the soul is sat chit ananda. And the body, being of opposite nature, is temporary, the soul is eternal. The body is dead and unconscious, the soul is conscious. The body is prone to so many diseases, distresses and miseries, whereas the soul is ananda, it's constantly blissful. So because of this essential incompatibility between the body and the soul cannot really enjoy the body level. Although there may be a few pleasures here and there. Now for the soul to become divorced from the body, soul to become detached from the body and to experience spiritual reality, requires a process of purification. And that process of purification is centered on self-mastery. Because as long as we are engaging in bodily pleasures, as long as we are engaging in sense gratification, we are so caught up in bodily consciousness that we cannot become detached from it. Just like a person who is drinking cannot become sober. Now just by stopping drinking, one doesn't become sober. By stopping drinking and then finding some other constructive activities that free the person from the obsession with drinking, that's how the person will become free from that drinking habit. But the first thing that is required is one has to stop drinking. So as long as the person is in a stupor because of alcohol, thinking, oh, I am the king of the world, the person cannot even begin the process of recovery. Similarly, spiritual life means that we have to regain spiritual consciousness. And regaining spiritual consciousness means that we have to give up bodily consciousness. Now, bodily consciousness is caused largely by our uncontrolled mind and senses. The senses want to enjoy. I want to eat this, I want to get that, I want to get that. And because of this, now generally as soon as the sense objects come in front of us, they cause forgetfulness of our spiritual identity. Now as soon as a male sees a female or a female sees a male, both of them become riveted to their bodies. And the male starts thinking, oh, this female, how can I attract her? She's so attractive, how can I attract her? And the female starts thinking, oh, this person, this male looks quite well-to-do. How can I attract him? So both of them basically become riveted to their bodily identity. Now, as long as we are pandering to the senses, we remain riveted to the bodily identity. Riveted means sometimes when we have to fix something, we don't just close it, we use rivets and seal it shut. So like that, the soul's consciousness becomes riveted to the body by the uncontrolled mind and senses, and the material desires that come and the attachment that result when we act on those material desires. So when we want to become free from bodily consciousness, we have to begin with self-mastery. So some people feel that spiritual life is all about experiences. I go to the temple and I dance in front of the temple. Oh, I feel so nice. That's what spiritual life is about. I feel so peaceful. That's good. We feel peaceful when we go to the temple. But we just don't want an occasional feeling of peace. We want a steady feeling of peace that can come only through purification. So going to external may make me peaceful, but my goal is not just to stay peaceful at those times. To be peaceful at other times also, I have to become free from the desires that rob away my peace. And which are the desires that rob away my peace? There's lust, anger, greed, envy, pride and illusion. Now we may feel that I have so many anxieties in my life. Yes, there are anxieties which rob away our peace. But those anxieties, if you look deeply, generally they originate from lust, anger, greed, envy, pride and illusion. Either our lust, anger, greed, envy, pride and illusion, or others' lust, anger, greed, envy, pride and illusion. So when we suffer because of others' lust, anger, greed, envy, pride and illusion, we are basically getting the karmic reactions for our past misdeeds. But essentially, the sufferings of this world are because of the uncontrolled mind and senses of everyone. The more people's mind and senses become controlled, they will become happy and they will contribute to the happiness of others. Even in this life, what to speak of the next? So, that's why spiritual life requires self-control. Without self-control, there cannot be any steady practice of spiritual life. one can practice, but one will not be steady. One practice spiritual life for some time, again one will be dragged down. Practice for some time, again dragged down. So if you want steadiness, we have to have a regular program which keeps us detached from gross sensual enjoyments and helps us progress further towards spiritual advancement. Now, Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport that's why he says, in all spiritual affairs, one's first duty is to control his mind and senses. Unless one controls his mind and senses, one cannot make any advancement in spiritual life. Now, these sort of statements may be a little frightening for us. You may feel that I have been chanting Hare Krishna, but still I am not able to control my mind and senses. Is it that I will make no spiritual advancement? To understand that it's a serious matter. You know, if I am lighting a fire, actually the fire will give illumination. But if at the same time I put water on it, then the fire will not be blazed forward. It will not give illumination, but it will get extinguished. So the two efforts will almost cancel each other. Bhaktisiddhanta Swami Thakur would give the example of a person rowing a boat. But if the person, a boat person is rowing a boat throughout the night, but the person forgot to remove the anchor. As long as the anchor is there, then the person cannot really move. So the anchor is the anchor of attachment. As long as we stay attached to material things, we may be rowing. That means we may be making spiritual, we may be doing the activities that lead to spiritual advancement, but we won't make so much spiritual advancement. Those activities, no doubt, don't go waste. They will accumulate to our spiritual credits at a subtle level, but eventually they will become manifest when we get the resolve to stop pandering to our senses and break free from the shackles of the senses. That's why Prabhupada writes that one cannot make any advancement in spiritual life. Now, when Srila Prabhupada asked this question, especially when he was preaching in America, at that time, the idea of sense control was radical. And then some people asked Prabhupada during one talk show, Swami, why are you against sex? And Prabhupada says, we are not against sex. We have our students who get married. But then why are you against illicit sex? Prabhupada said that for spiritual advancement, the mind should be focused on spiritual truth, ultimately on Krishna. But if the mind is constantly thinking, how can I get an attractive sexual partner? Then how can the mind think of God? So the person accepted. Srila Prabhupada gave a simple explanation. Ultimately, if I want to become purified, I have to develop love for Krishna. Love for Krishna is developed when I keep the mind fixed on Krishna. Then my mind becomes purified and a natural attraction to Krishna awakens. But if I'm attached to so many worldly things, then how can my mind think of Krishna at all? So even from a practical point of view, we'll see that our attraction to Krishna will increase only when we think about Krishna. And therefore that thinking, we need some level of sense control. Then Srila Prabhupada explains very significantly that we are all in passion and ignorance. And then he says, one must promote himself to the platform of goodness, Sattva Guna, by following the instructions of Rupa Goswami. And then everything concerning how to make further progress will be revealed. Very striking point Prabhupada says over here, that once we come to Sattva or Sattva Guna, then we can actually sense Krishna's inner voice also. And evam prasanna manaso bhagavad bhakti yogata bhagavat tattva vijnanam mukta sangasya jayate. In the second chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the series of verses which have later become a part of the Dharma book, Srila Prabhupada has explained the sequence very nicely. And there, once a person comes to Sattva Guna, then one becomes joyful. Evam prasanna manaso bhagavat bhakti yogata. One practices bhakti. And by the practice of bhakti, what happens is, Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam. One gets knowledge of Bhagavat Tattva, a spiritual knowledge. Mukta Sangasya Jayate. By that one becomes mukta, one becomes liberated. This is how further progress is made. So, we will get knowledge of Krishna further, but at least by the practice of instructions of Guru, Sadhu Shastra, one has to come to the mode of goodness. It's not that we give up the instructions of Guru Sadhu Shastra after we come to the mode of goodness. No. Then also we have to follow the instruction of Guru Sadhu Shastra. But there are many situations when the instruction of Guru Sadhu Shastra will not be clear at a particular time. So at that time, we have to decide based on our own discretion. and the inner voice will become much clearer to us about what we should do, what we should not do, when we are situated in the mode of goodness. Then Srila Prabhupada makes a memorable statement: advancement in Krishna consciousness depends on the attitude of the follower. It depends on the attitude of the follower. So attitude is a popular word in today's world. See, everything depends on attitude, because you should have a positive attitude. So attitude is important. But what is Srila Prabhupada referring to by attitude? Is he by saying attitude, you know, we should always think positive? Is he saying that we should think that we will be able to achieve whatever we are dreaming of? Srila Prabhupada has a specific context. If you look behind and after what he has said from the statement, it's clear that Srila Prabhupada is talking about sense control and mind control. So sense control and mind control may seem to be a very difficult task. But if a devotee is determined that no, I will become sense control, I will become mind control, then that practice will eventually lead to sense control and mind control. So Prabhupada talks about Goswamis in the purport, and he says the Goswamis are those who control their mind and senses. To achieve the highest success in life by becoming a Goswami and then a pure devotee of the Lord, one must follow the instruction known as Upadeshamdu. So Prabhupada says the highest success of life is to become a Goswami. Goswami means we learn to control our senses, and with the controlled senses we serve Krishna and thereby develop love for Krishna. The Bhagavatam says that the Lord is conquered by the love of those who have conquered their senses. The Lord is conquered by the love of those who have conquered their senses. Because those who have conquered their senses, their love is pure. It's undistracted. And the Lord is conquered by such love. So therefore, we also have to focus on both these aspects. We want to develop devotion to Krishna, but at the same time, we also have to control our mind and senses. And the Bhagavad and the Ishopanishad and the Nectar of Instruction will describe to us how we can control our mind and senses, and how we can become Goswamis. Then Srila Prabhupada writes that those who can do like this, for them, spiritual advancement will be easier. So Srila Prabhupada writes, one should follow these instructions very strictly. Then it will be easier to make one's life successful. Easier to make one's life successful. What does this mean? That actually, spiritual advancement is not easy. When you say this is easier, that means that is tougher. So that means easier is the word used when we are talking about something in comparison. So if you don't follow the instructions, then spiritual advancement will be much tougher. Just as if I have to drive on the road, if I don't follow the traffic rules, my driving will be much more tougher. Temporarily it may seem easier, oh, I can just turn wherever I want, I can go wherever I want. But then there will be constant hazard, there may be vehicles shooting from the other side, there may be police chasing me to give me a ticket, or there may be hazard in so many ways if I'm not following the rules. So when we follow the traffic rules, then journey is relatively easier. Of course, there are hazards even when we are following the rules, but they are lesser because there is some level of orderliness in our journey. Similarly, when we are practicing spiritual life, if without considering the instructions of Guru Sadhu Shastra we try to practice spiritual life, our advancement will be very difficult. There will be a lot of trouble because we will be struggling on our own, trying to find out in various situations what to do and how to go ahead. So the scriptural rules and regulations as given in books like Rupa Goswami's Deshamrut, they are like the road. And when we know the road, we move along the road. And sometimes the road may be blocked, sometimes it may be congested. Sometimes following certain rules may be difficult, and accordingly we will have to do time-place adjustments. That is also talked about Niyamagraha by Rupa Goswami. But that is later. But the important point is, when there is a road, moving along is easier. Journey is easier. When there is no road, then moving along is much more difficult. Srila Prabhupada says that if you follow the rules that are given by the Acharyas, then your life will become successful more easily. So, we'll discuss this Upadeshamrut more in detail in our next class. We'll start with the first verse in it. Today, we discussed primarily about how the nectar of instruction takes us from Shraddha to Prema. We discussed the nine stages with the metaphor of a treat person taking his treatment and getting recovered. And then with the position of Rupa Goswami discussed within our canon. And then after that we discussed the necessity for sense control. We said it is important not to pour water on a fire if you want it to blaze forth. And then lastly we discussed about how a devotee should have the attitude that I can and I will become a sense control person. Thank you very much. Shri Shobhanish, Shri Desha Amrit Ki Jai, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Bhakta Vinda Ki Jai, Tai Gaur Premanande, Hari Hari. Thank you very much.